Hello, everyone. We are Kaza Matsuri, a community for key fans, and this is the Clannad Book Club podcast. Today, we're here to discuss The Fuko Root by Jun Maeda. Joining us this week is the Kamen Pepe.
Objection! Pepe can introduce himself like a proper adult.
Ikiari! And we also have a new podcaster with us, CJ.
Hello. I'm CJ. I've been on the forum for like 5 months now, and my favorite is Clannad.
Favorite key series is Clannad, yeah? Nice.
Pretty good choice, considering the current topic, huh?
Not so many people choose Clannad as their favorite, I noticed, but hey. Nice.
I guess that means that he's got a whole lot to say about this Fuko route, though, you know what I'm saying? But I do know that you're going to go ahead and spit some hot fire and give us this 30-second recap about Fuko, right?
Tomia, tired of hunting lollies, decides to hunt for ghosts, only to later realize it's yet another lolly. Pranks ensue, and Fuko, that's not a knife! Nagisa steps in and introduces Onee-chan-sensei. It's apparently Oprah's favorite things, because you get a starfish, you get a starfish, everybody gets a starfish! Things go vaguely wrong when Senpai doesn't notice her. Tsunohara is only useful to vaguely remember. Onee-chan-sensei has her wedding, and everyone is happy, and Fuko returns, presumably because someone unsealed her from the magic circle of starfish bread.
That was a good 30-second recap. I love the Oprah part.
That was quite good.
You get a starfish! You get a starfish!
Everybody.
Okay.
Man, I got something to say about starfishes later on, too, so we'll be talking about starfishes later. Y'all get hype. Alright, so this is a pretty interesting route. I don't know. It's interesting. This is a bit different. First half of it was another route. That was kind of exciting.
I don't have any arguments.
Unless you hadn't read ahead, there's a whole lot of Nagisa in here, which was really good, and I guess was, for some people, kind of a stark contrast to the actual Fuko part.
True. That's true. Oh, well.
But all in all, I liked this route. I mean, it definitely wasn't the best, so looking at it relatively, there were some things that I think have already been stated. But I mean, I gave it a 3. Yeah. I'll leave it at that, and I'll get into my finer details as we go. Gave it a 3. I think that's fair.
I also gave it a 3. I keep giving it shit, saying it's a bad route, but in all honesty, I thought it was average. Like, if it were a bad route, I'd give it a 2, but yeah. About the Nagisa thing, since you did point it out, I at least like the fact that they explained why you need to be with Nagisa to get to the Fuko route. And it's not like other routes where, is just important. Arbitrarily, cafe, Yoshino, anyway. But yeah.
I actually gave it a 5.
Oh, alright.
So, I mean, the thing is, I'm not actually that good at ratings. It would probably actually have been better for me to give it a 4, but I gave it a 5 because it is the first route, the first route I actually read of the new Clannad release. So I don't have any real standard to compare it to, but I thought, I try to disregard that and just like go off just the route only. I mean, it seemed pretty good when I read it. I was like engaged the whole time, so
yeah.
I thought that it might deserve a 5, and I was just I'm just feeling it, so I'll give it a 5.
Actually, you know, that's one thing that I did not feel in this route, because most of the time when I play Clannad, I have Discord open and I'm chatting with other people on voice. And usually when it gets to the meat of the route, I start to ignore the people talking on Discord. But with Fuko's route, I didn't feel that. Like, I didn't get absorbed into the route as much as I wished I could have been. I guess that might have been one of my issues with it. But hey, if other people felt differently, I can't really argue with that, can I?
I feel like this route was actually adapted kind of excessively well in the anime. I think I probably ended up liking it there more. But there were some little details in this route that for some reason just didn't click with me when I saw the anime version. And I guess I'll get into that. I found a lot of little themes in this route that, like, don't really go anywhere, which is probably one of its weaknesses, but it was still kind of exciting all the same to me. Because I did have to actually stop a few times and think about things, and I did get absorbed in it. Just thinking, like, even, I even liked that point. There's actually a line where they brought up how in high school life, in this recurring character, which I can't remember her name already, the girl who, like, apparently knows Fuko, just kind of is being cold as hell. Yeah. She is always, like, just so focused on studying, and she's like, oh, third year, just gotta do stuff. And there's lots of these repeating topics about school life and your enjoyment in school life, and her specifically brings up the idea of studying, and how Tomoya says, like, it's kind of amazing how quickly people change in their third year, and I actually agree to that a lot, and I think that that kind of came back around in a lot of different ways about how this moving on from school and, like, how things are at the beginning of your school life and then at the end of your school life, about how, like, it completely changes in that kind of high school segment, is just one. That's just one thing that was really interesting.
And I guess the game likes to point out how Tomoya and Sunohara and even Nagisa at this point are, like, away from that whole group of people who are too focused trying to get into university. And, you know, sometimes you gotta stop and smell the futon. I want to make that joke again.
Yeah. And there's also, like, the repeating thing about how whenever Fuko starts becoming, like, an existence that people start forgetting, it actually reminds me a lot about even just how her one friend, or not even really her friend, just that one person somehow remembers her. How, like, whenever you get out of school, like, there are people that you'll always remember, but at the same time, maybe not. Like, you kind of start going on with your own life, and you start doing your own things, and you kind of forget about those things, even though it may be one of the most interesting moments of your life. And then, you know, you pop open that old yearbook, and it just all comes back, right? Just how, like, looking at a starfish is going to go ahead and instantly remind you of something that is important.
Yep. I guess that plays a lot into how Fuko's whole existence is. I guess we can start getting into this. Like, it's revealed pretty early on that Fuko is an astral projection. She is in the coma, and what you are interacting with is a physical manifestation of herself while in the coma. And both me and Aspie talking to us through this. Through the document as an astral projection. Anyway, we noticed that the astral projection thing, we noticed that the astral projection thing is thrown out very early. It's not made as a conflict of the root itself. It's made as the setting of the root, and I found that interesting as compared to other key routes which have it as a conflict. I mean, well, how did you guys feel about the astral projection thing?
Weird.
Definitely weird.
I'm not actually sure. It's like, I don't know what I feel about it. I mean,
it's hard to say, I think. Like, I personally gave up on thinking about how it works, and I just accepted that, okay, this is the story. I have to accept that this is how they're going to do it. I'll just read the rest of the story like
weird.
That.
Weird. It's really weird. And I think that, say, like, coming from CJ's perspective, I could understand how he wouldn't really think twice about it, right? Because this is his first new Clannad experience, right? But, yeah. Like, looking at it from, like, he probably has good eyes for it, honestly. Like, that's probably how you should view all things, as kind of, like, of themselves. But there's just, it sucks, because Clannad is known for its consistency. Like, it's been said podcast to podcast, and it's one of the things that I really like about it. And so when you throw this, like, completely just nutty idea at me, and then don't seem surprised about it, like, there's almost no shock at all. Like, everyone just kind of rolls with it, and it's weird. It's very weird. Aspie used the word nonchalant. I think that's a perfect description for it. And it's probably one of the major knocking points of the route for me. Like, it's just odd that they chose to go this way for it. But looking at Clannad overall, there are some interesting things to actually pick up from it that are beneficial. One of the things is that it's directly speaking to the fact that there's weird shit in Clannad, and they're not shy to show, hey, there's some weird shit in here. And I think that that's actually pretty fair.
If it's better that you get this feeling right now as opposed to getting it later on in the game, because if you do get it later on in the game, it would lose all its impact.
And I mean, this isn't like anything that's unknown about, you know, key VNs. Like, there are some stories that just, like, there's that one fucking weird route, you know? Like, it's just there. And I'm starting to think that maybe it's just something that they like to do. They like to just have that one route that kind of is outside of realism in a way. I feel like this strikes a little bit differently, like, compared to Sunahara, where I said that the scenario was weird. This is kind of different in that it doesn't feel as weird because it's not even trying to actually be a realistic in a way. You know what I mean?
I guess I see what you mean. It's not saying that, hey, this is something that actually happens in the real world. Obviously, it doesn't.
But you know, hey man, I gave it a 3 anyway, so what do I know? I still rated it lower than I rated Sunahara. No, I did rate Sunahara a 3. Durr. So maybe they're about the even in my mind. I don't know. But anyways, going to the astral projection thing, you said that there was no way for you to, like, figure out why, right? And this actually was brought up by Zach M, and he said it was just something that was just weird to him, and, well, I kind of have something I want to say about it.
Go ahead.
So, people directly even called out Shima here as another example, but they didn't want to use that as an excuse for this route having Fuko existing and being weird, right? And pardon me, CJ, you not really knowing exactly what I'm referencing, even though you did see the anime. It might be a little bit different for you. But so, like, I envision Fuko, this, I'm just going to go flat out and say it. Fuko's existence, and this is brought up very clearly, is that Fuko made a wish to Coco saying that she wanted to make friends. Like, Coco says that, as she took it, she said that Fuko wants to make friends for me because that's something that I was pushing her to do or whatever, right? And this is definitely isn't, you know, foolproof. And then there's also this wish that exists of Fuko wanting Coco and Yoshino to get together, right? Like, there's these two, that's just two examples. And we already know that this strange phenomena, for example, the light orbs, what exactly that they're capable of. For example, Shima.
Yep.
So when I look at Fuko and then look at Clannad as a whole, Fuko's existence immediately becomes significantly less far-fetched whenever I learn that there is something extremely powerful within her, a very specific cause for her existence. To the point where I think, you know, hey, like, she's like, what if she is a light orb? Like, what if her manifestation comes of that? And I don't know, what do you think about that?
That's a very interesting theory.
I know it's not directly stated, and it definitely doesn't get there, but then there's, like, another interesting idea about how you don't get a light orb in this route either. Like, it's almost like there's this happiness that's being manifested, but it doesn't necessarily have to do with Tomoya. It's another experience that's happening outside of his experiences, you know what I mean? Much like how this route is a kind of, it's another thing going on. It's like a support route. Kind of like Captain.
I'm definitely confident that light orbs have some play into this whole astral projection thing. It's just that the VN actually never referred to it as compared to, say, the Messiah route, which actually showed the light orb that Shima was wearing in some kind of pendant thing.
Yeah.
It could be
an oversight, or it could be an intentional thing with how the entire route is just completely bonkers to begin with, so they don't feel like it's necessary to point it out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, I still don't. I mean, that's a good theory. It's just that we don't get any information to confirm or deny that theory, so I have no comments. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just realized that like Coco is like talking about like Fuko's experience at school. She doesn't like she's not supposed to know about it. I don't think she really does, but like she says it in a way that it's not totally dismissing it. Like, she seems to believe that she's having this experience at school, but she can't be possible.
When she visits Fuko.
Where I want to bring up the kind of the light orb idea as well, is that it's not necessarily just all willy-nilly. Like, there are kind of... It's playing by a rule set. Like, there's still something in place here. And that's that there can't be like these discrepancies, right? So I feel like there's a reason that other people, whenever they start realizing what's going on, specifically Coco, whenever she actually kind of addresses the possibility of Fuko's other existence, which is a discrepancy. You cannot have her existing at the school and then also at the hospital. Like, there's a problem there. And I feel like once that is made, then that's when things start to break down.
See, actually, about that, the Kyuketsuki Miu did mention, like, Fuko is like Schrodinger's cat. If you don't open the box, she can exist in both places at the same time. But when you know that she shouldn't exist, that she's supposed to be in the coma, then you start forgetting her.
Yep, that's a perfect example.
Sunohara is the prime example for this, because we know that he went all the way to the other town, and that's only when he started forgetting about Fuko entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just wonder, why doesn't it work for Tomoya and Nagisa? Because Tomoya and Nagisa know early on that she's in the coma, right? And they accept that as the truth. But they don't forget Fuko until later in the game.
I think there's a degree of attachment that is important. Much like how Tomoya has like an attachment to the town or whatever, I feel like the... Mm-hmm. Or like an attachment to happy experiences, or specifically his personal attachment. Tomoya is really good in this route because it's very clear that he, at least to me, it felt very clear that he's extremely empathetic for Fuko. Like, he...
Yes.
This is another situation where we have someone who's a family member and someone who's, you know, it's her older sister, but she's almost like a mother figure in a way. You can consider her as one. But it's a family situation where Fuko has it worse than he does, and it frustrates him, and he gets extremely emotionally invested in this trying to help Coco move on and trying to help Fuko like actualize her wish. Just something I got from Tomoya in this route, because like you have like how I feel like there are different levels of attachment that help people kind of hold on to these memories. Your prime examples would be Tomoya, Nagisa, Sunohara probably being the weakest, and then you have the Furukawas. Like how when Sanae stops being able to see her, but she still has those residual memories, because you could kind of figure that Sanae probably kind of sees Fuko as almost like a daughter, you know? It's a friend of her daughter, it's like a daughter-in-law or some way, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. In the end, they do forget. So.
Yeah, that's true. It's a bit of an odd existence, her whole existence, and VJ said on the audience that he's guessing it's because they didn't see her in the hospital, whereas Sunohara saw her in the hospital.
That's kind of where I was going.
Like, maybe if Tomoya and Nagisa actually went to the hospital and saw Fuko's body, they would instantly forget about the...
Just how, like, Coco, like, had obviously just been to see Fuko, and then she shows up at the school. There's no way she's gonna see her there. Like, it's just not gonna happen. Like, that memory is way too fresh for her. It's just not gonna work.
Yeah. CJ, you were mentioning earlier, like, you wonder what Coco saw when Nagisa was hugging Fuko.
Oh, right. Yeah, so there's a CG at the festival where Tomoya first meets Coco at the gate, and then Nagisa and Fuko come along after, and then, like, Coco says something that makes it clear that she can't see her, but then Nagisa and Tomia still can, and Nagisa's hugging Fuko in the CG. What would that look like? What are the physics?
is Fuko just... in, like, yeah, that's actually, I joked saying that she probably looks like a Shia LaBeouf with the just do it pose, but that's actually an interesting point. Does Fuko appear invisible to other people? Like, physically invisible,
steal, like completely different, or things.
Yeah, like is the world playing mind tricks where it removes any possibility of her existing? That's just an interesting way to think about it. Maybe she sees Nagisa as just standing there holding nothing.
That makes me think about the starfish too, because like
okay.
Whenever people like realize that Fuko's a thing, then they notice the starfish more readily. Whereas if they're forgetting about Fuko, they're kind of throwing the starfish away. Like how if you fail to get on the route, kind of like what Tomoya does, where he's like, "Oh, I'll just set it somewhere," or Tsunohara throws it like a shuriken out into the bushes. Or
shuriken.
Like there's always things that happen where they just kind of fade into non-existence. Or is it that people just? Because, I mean, they made, like, a shitload of starfish, so, like, in reality, there's probably just a whole bunch of freaking wooden starfish laying all over the place. But people can't see them, so who knows?
I guess there is a lot of importance about, well, the starfish specifically. We all know that Fuko loves them starfish.
Yeah.
But, I found it funny how, like, the difference between getting a good end and bad end is Fuko talking about the starfish festival. Like, that's essentially, I felt that's what made the difference in getting the good end, bad end, because she only gets the starfish festival dream if you carry her on your back.
Oh, that brings me to my next point.
Oh, yeah.
Does the starfish festival mean something more than just for fun? I feel like there should be something, because like if it's that important.
I
think she mentioned it twice.
I don't know if the Starfish Festival, like the dream aspect, is necessarily, it kind of exists as like kind of the romance end, I guess. But I feel like the starfish itself is kind of symbolic of a few things. The most interesting aspect, of course, being the ending, or whenever Tomoya says, whenever he first sees, quote unquote, first sees the wooden thing, he just immediately calls it a starfish. It's because Fuko's left her mark, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like starfish themselves, like the actual carvings, are kind of like representative of someone wanting to leave something, making a mark, I guess, so to speak, in your life. I mean, something that you, there's a lot of creation in this route, and it all goes towards this idea of trying to do something against impossible odds and never cheating to do it. There's a lot of little things about Fuko's way. She's like, no cheating. You got to do it the right way.
Fuko has to do it herself.
Yeah. She has to make them herself. They need to be her starfish that she gives people, and she can't just go out and meet Coco. It's just not gonna work. Like, she's gotta do it herself. She has to do it the right way, or it's not gonna work at all. And even if it does work, it's not gonna be the same feeling. Like, you have to leave your mark this way. It's fun in a perceptive sense. It's really fun. I actually really like the starfish kind of perceptiveness here, where there's kind of a good development period of, is it a star or is it a starfish? Oh, that's cute. Oh, that's disgusting. I think that's actually kind of a fun dynamic, because the fact that it's a starfish means it's something very... First, it's something that's very specific to her. There's actually a purpose for why it's a starfish. It's something that's in her memory. In her time that she spent with Coco or whatever. But it's also something very specific that somebody who's gifted it can then recognize that it's a starfish. And then realize that that's only something freaking Fuko would do, because she's weird, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, you'd see it as a star. Or a shuriken, if you're Tsunohara.
So that's good. I like that connection.
Yeah. It's a unique way of using it.
I think... Oh, in the around the beginning of the route, or actually... It might not actually be part of the route, but, like, near the beginning of the game, the first time Fuko gives Tomia a starfish. He re-gifts it to his dad. I found that interesting because the family dynamic of Clannad, or Clannad's theme in general, just family.
Yeah.
So, and I was wondering if this had any significance because Tomia's dad was just like, "Oh, it's cute. Did you make this yourself?" I don't think you could. Oh, right, you didn't make it yourself, but I'll take care of it for the both of us.
I think that that is specifically important because this actually happens the same thing if you're doing the Nagisa stuff along the way with the Dango.
Yeah.
There are lots of instances of his father kind of digging through his stuff, and Tomoya doesn't like that. Doesn't like it at all. And his father still doesn't really treat him respectfully as a son. But there are aspects to this where you can see that his dad is, like, trying to do something. Like, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's very strange that he's taking an interest to these things and having something to say about it. And, I mean, Tomoya's shrugging it off and just trying to, you know, get out of there as soon as possible. But it's definitely there for a reason, and it's let you know that there's... that this is a character, you know, like he's there to stay and he's going to make his appearance known.
I honestly felt like what Tomoya's dad is doing, it felt like he was definitely trying to connect again with Tomoya.
He's trying to reach out. And you definitely, absolutely.
Yeah, trying to reach out with Tomoya. And Tomoya is just denying him every single chance he gets. And it kind of makes Tomoya look like the bad guy, at least from a reader's perspective. And I don't know if that's what Maeda wanted to portray.
He even says that.
But that's how.
Maybe if they could do something like this together, that they could have a chance to talk. So I felt like it was really clear that he was trying to reach out to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Well, that's just the first that we'll get to see of him. It's nice that it's related to Fuko in a way.
Yeah. Right. Are there any specific themes that you guys caught in this route?
Well, I was going to mention this earlier, but about Fuko's dream with the Starfish Festival, I think the significance actually was... in the dream, Fuko says Tomia told her not to play alone because it's a starfish festival. And I think why this is the difference between good and bad end is because she realizes, or actually earlier on in the route, she says she was going to do some things alone. I believe it was just making starfish.
Yep.
And Nagisa says
she was fine. Nagisa
says, you aren't supposed to get used to being alone. So then, I guess, with this dream, she realizes that she shouldn't be alone because...
Mm-hmm. That's actually a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point, huh?
There's definitely multiple wishes at play.
Yeah.
And they all kind of come together at the end.
I guess I just really... I really like the theme of how she learns to be friends with, of all people, Tomoya and Sunohara. Nagisa is a given, but those two troublemakers. And it plays a lot into how Koko was making Fuko out to be this weird girl who only sticks to her onesan and never makes friends, you know? And like at the end of the day, we see that after everything's done, she genuinely becomes friends with those three, and even though none of them except Furukawa neither of them actually admit that they're friends with Fuko, they still are. And I guess that's why I really, really like the ending B, as they call it, where the epilogue says that would you please become Fuko's friend, because I think that works out better as a pool to Fuko's route as compared to the romance ending where you please go out with Fuko that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I
also
would agree.
I also think it's because that I love Nagisa and Tomoya's dynamic way too much. The bad end of this route, when you don't carry her on her back, basically what happens, if you haven't read it, is Tomoya forgets about Fuko, he goes to Nagisa, and Fuko kind of invisibly puts their hands together, and it's a really nice kind of sweet ending for Tomoya and Nagisa. Like, even if Fuku's gone, Tomoya and Nagisa still stay together, and it's like the only bad ending that makes me actually feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I'm sorry, Fuko, but I like the Nagisa Tomoya
thing. It's actually a good kind of characterization of her character as well. Like, it benefits her, like, that she's, you know, not just kind of playing a third wheel. Like, she actually genuinely appreciates both of them.
Yeah, she does want them to be together because she sees them both as friends and she wants them both to be happy. And that's also another mature side of Fuko that that isn't made very apparent because of all her childish stuff.
Of all them Fuko joke scenes. Gotta get that Fuko master.
Oh, speaking of Fuko master, what is your favorite prank?
Okay, let's talk about this for a while.
Alright,
Biz, why don't you start?
I'm pretty sure we're all on the same page. Him changing places with Ryo was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, that was funny.
Objectively, I don't know if I can consider this objectively. Objectively, that was the best prank, I think. It's just that I've seen it way too many times that it doesn't have any impact on me anymore. But it's really good. One Fuko prank made me laugh a lot more than I expected. It's when you replace her starfish with a slipper, and then she just suddenly goes to one random girl.
At least it's not a slipper.
Exactly. You just go to a random girl and have this. Why do I have a slipper? I don't know. It made me laugh a lot. And then another one was, I guess, you actually don't get Fuko Master for this, so I don't know if you guys got it, but when you try to feed her Sanae's bread.
Yeah.
It's the first appearance of the rainbow bread, and Akio says, "You are rainbow." And when Tomoya gives it to Fuko, he says, "You are rainbow."
Yeah, there's lots of fun in this route. I feel like the actual flow of this route was pretty good. Like, the content may have not been there, but the flow was good. I know that it's a bit kind of weird because it kind of starts out with supernatural quote-unquote twists, but, like, the actual flow and the twist of the route is kind of, like, trying to overcome an obstacle and then, like, finally determining what it is that you need to do and then getting hit with something else, and then there's, like, a downhill period and then there's a second peak. And I kind of like that. Like, it was natural, and I mean, it is kind of common, but it worked really good here, even though it wasn't really your typical scenario. It's pretty cool.
I did like the comedy in this, like, I like seeing Fuko bullied. I'm sorry. I know this will get the Fuko fan club attack me, but I like seeing Fuko bullied. And I like the pranks that you play. Attack! You know from their voices, it's a bunch of nerds.
You don't want to just see, like, a bunch of dudes sitting in one of Key's offices all just screaming in the same room whenever those voice files play. It's so good.
Yeah. CJ, you didn't answer what your favorite prank is.
Oh, I was gonna say the swap with Ro. That one was
pretty
funny.
Alright. Yeah. Same page, definitely.
That one was the best one.
Better all on the same page. I guess going back to on topic, no more fun allowed. I wanted to say that my two most prevalent themes that may be a bit different from what other people got, but they're kind of like just little bits that I picked up on. I felt like teachers was actually kind of a theme here. I mean, obviously we see Komura and Coco as two kind of prevalent forces in this route, and you kind of have a little back and forth between the two of them, maybe not directly, but just in general. And I felt like there was some admiration of teachers in this route. I even liked even the art teacher. Whenever they talk to the art teacher in that teacher's room or whatever, and they're like, he's like, oh, do you see he says something, Tomoya says something, I think it was, about how, like,
you
they're
see the appreciation
aspiring artists
of art.
Or something, like, they've seen the spark. Yeah, and the art teacher just like makes a complete 180, and he's like, "Oh, is that so? I'll see what I can do for you then." And like he goes and gets them a whole bunch of wood blocks, right? Because let's be real, nothing's probably better to a teacher than actually seeing a genuine spark in one of their students for something that they're willing to do. And there was another little story that Coco tells about Nagisa, and she says like how she loves that moment whenever you get the, I did it, you know, seeing a student succeed, like that exclamation of success is so important to them. And I feel like that wraps right back around to the idea of Fuko's determination in trying to overcome these odds and how she's doing these carvings and how she can't cheat, you know, like just all of these things kind of come together to kind of make you appreciate setting a goal regardless of the actual trip there and just trying to get it done. And then feeling, I guess, pride or accomplishment, was something that I felt like that was pointed out a lot. And I mean, I really liked Komura and I really liked Coco. I feel like these were awesome characters.
I do feel like, what Nagisa said about Coco, where she doesn't want to, she doesn't want to approach Coco, or she doesn't want to sit and have a chat with Coco unless she actually graduated. And that goes a lot into what you just said, where you need this kind of accomplishment that you got from the teachers. And Nagisa, I do believe that Coco is an important part of Nagisa's school life. Like, if it were just another third year who repeated the grade, it wouldn't have worked as well as Nagisa in this route. The fact that Nagisa is so close to Coco makes it actually quite important, you know?
And she just so, kind of gives off this aura. Like, I really liked how Tomoya put it, where he's just like, man, imagine if I had her as a teacher. Imagine where I would be now. Like, it probably would have completely changed him, because he just gets so inspired by the whole thing. The other little theme that I picked up on that was probably a bit more direct than the last one was regrets. I felt like regrets were kind of looming around in this route. I feel like in Coco's mind, she is genuinely happy and satisfied with where she is, and I think she has to kind of change her perception by talking with Tomoya to actually see things a different way, to understand what Fuko wants for her. So like, I feel like in life, you may genuinely see something a certain way, and you may feel this way, but maybe you should kind of step out of your comfort zone and look at things from the outside, or look at things from another perspective, because maybe things are different than they seem. And it kind of gives this idea of rethinking what you're doing with your life. Are you living in the now? Are you living in the past? Or are you living for the future? Like, what exactly are you doing? And she's probably spent, like, 2 years? I don't even know how long she'd probably known Yusuke at this point.
Two or three years.
I don't know how long she'd known Yusuke at the point. But she wasn't able to find her own happiness because she wanted Fuko to be there with her. I guess she was afraid of going on with her own happiness and then regretting not letting Fuko be there with her in that. Having Fuko lose more experiences. But, you know, Tomoya puts it best. You gotta find your own happiness. You need to. I don't think anyone wants anything more for their fellow person than for them to be happy.
That's a good point. Like, I'm suddenly having flashbacks of Air, because I felt like that was the main theme of Air. this kind of happiness, when you're looking for your own happiness, you really shouldn't have it you shouldn't have it tied down too much because of other people, because like, you shouldn't try to satisfy these other people while you're searching for your own happiness, because at the end of the day, there's nothing bad about chasing your own happiness, right?
And I love what Tomoya said, where he's like, isn't it more selfish to want to, like, have that other person experience something with you? Like, it was kind of an interesting, kind of different way of thinking, in that, having that other person as something that you want, is that more selfish than doing what you want, and not necessarily, like, with the other person? I don't know, it's very, just kind of not something that you normally think about. I actually liked how it kind of puts you in a different little boat. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. It puts you in a different mindset than usual, and I like that. It makes you kind of uncomfortable. It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, as for me, I got the theme of friendship a lot from this route, especially with, well, like I said, the way the three of them interacted, and how, like, how you find friendship in the most unnatural of ways, maybe. Because Fuko didn't go to that school as an astral projection to find friends, right? She went there to get people to celebrate her sister's wedding. But she eventually did find these friends. And, like, you shouldn't be too stubborn about who you meet, maybe. Like, just accept the people who come into your life and make sure you actually appreciate them for what they are and what they've done for you, even if they didn't come at the time that you were looking for friends.
It's kind of like a fun comparison with to Moya and Sunohara, actually.
Yeah,
they kind of fit that. They fit that bill perfectly. Yeah.
They weren't looking for friends, but they definitely, like, if it weren't for their friendship, they would have gone a totally different route in life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a recurring. CJ, do you have any themes you want to talk about?
Okay. The main theme that I got from it was appreciate the little things, because Fuko, or as Coco says, like, she's been in a coma for 2 years. She hasn't experienced like school life or friend, God, like having line. A lot of friends.
I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So, she describes Fuko or her experience as a dream, and she says, like, please be with Fuko until the end of the dream. So going back, Fuko is just like, she hasn't had like had a lot of friends, she hasn't had like the class experience that everyone else has, so then that's why like Nagisa and Tomio get Sunohara and try to get a teacher to have like the class experience with Fuko, and it's just like, it makes her so happy because she doesn't get this kind of thing. It's just
answering a question correctly puts her in the Fuko trance state.
Tomoya
reacted to that too. Like, it puts him like in this instant like fire state. He's like, oh, gotta go, and like he immediately just, you know, about faces and runs off to do what he does, because he puts it really well. He says, you know, these are things that people take for granted, and you know deep down in him that he's thinking that he is one of those people. And that kind of goes right back to that empathetic side of him, where, like, he's like, you know, I may have blown my chances, but I'm not gonna let somebody else miss out on this, because it is a good thing.
Yep. Anyway, CJ, you were saying, please continue.
where was it? So, also, like, just the way that she, Coco describes it as a dream, like a dream, if it's not, like, what you see when you're sleeping, it's usually something that you, like, dedicate your life to. It's, like, such a powerful thing. Something that drives you, so that's why it's so important. And it's just, that's what I got. Appreciate the little things.
Okay.
Yeah, even something like a dream may be considered something that people take for granted. Like, there is that kind of difference between the two. Like, a dream is a word for both something that you see when you're asleep, right? But it's also something that you aspire towards. Like, it's something, like, it's your dream, right? And those two things may not necessarily be the same thing, but maybe you learn from one thing to the other.
It's also interesting how Coco doesn't really know of Fuko's astral existence, but she can kind of feel as her sister that, oh, Fuko is having this dream where she's having fun, you know? It's like there's this unspoken connection between the two. And I guess that plays into how she knows it's Fuko's... Well, it was Fuko's final goal before she got into the accident, that I'm going to make friends in high school. So she knows that that's Fuko's dream. Like, you know, the goal kind of dream. And essentially, it does end up becoming her dream while she's in the coma, if you can call it that.
Yeah. It's almost, it makes you wonder, like, who's lost sight of things more, Fuko or Coco? That's probably, it goes back even further to where, like, I feel like this route is more a development between those two than it is for Tomoya or Nagisa.
I guess you do have a point there, yeah. Like, they do learn about each other more.
Probably why there's even more of a disconnect with this route to other routes, too, is because it doesn't necessarily feel something that the reader gets overly connected to. Maybe that's why some people weren't so into it. Really interesting.
Yeah, I guess, well, I posted on the forum how I thought, like, there was a lack of emotions, I think, especially on Fuko's side, because Fuko was very stoic, I think. So we didn't really get to see what she genuinely felt about being this ghost. So I think it's because, like, that kind of feeling is something that only Fuko and Coco themselves will understand, and even Tomoya himself doesn't understand it. And we as readers are supposed to see things through Tomoya's eyes.
Yeah, it goes back to perception again. There's some perception play in this. I don't know.
Another thing, I did, about how Fuko doesn't, like, really seem sad about it. She never, like, says anything. But then Nagisa is just off there, just crying. But then Nagisa actually, like, she's very reasonable, because it's just, like, Fuko has experienced such harsh things that she doesn't even care, or she doesn't even, like, notice it anymore. Just that makes it just more sad, because she herself has just gotten used to it. You're not supposed to get used to stuff like that. You're not. It's just, as I said, or as Nagisa quoted before, you aren't supposed to get used to being alone.
Yeah. So that's a good mind. That's a little connections and things, but I don't know. I guess we should probably start winding it down. Any last super important pieces that you guys got?
Carafian had his key point, and I guess we shouldn't talk. I was kind of saving that for last. What did you make of the ending? I guess we can focus more on the epilogue where she talks to Sunohara and Nagisa and Tomoya. What actually happened? Did she wake up in time to see them all in school? Is it a dream? Is it a hypothetical thing? What do you guys think it is?
You know, in the 30-second recap, presumably she was, and someone unsealed her from the magic circle of starfish bread.
Yeah,
but that's the last
starfish bender. Yeah,
but I think she did wake up. I don't remember why I was thinking this, but it was something having to do with her dream was fulfilled, and so she woke up, and then just...
That's probably the best way to look at it. I think people were looking into some inconsistencies, though, that made things seem weird. Yeah, I'm not really sure. There was some weird stuff, apparently.
The fact that Nagisa was bedridden at that time, so unless both Nagisa got better and Fuko got better, and I think that's the only actual way it could have happened. I personally thought it was a hypothetical situation, like maybe it might have been Tomoya's dream, because the line right before that thing happens is, I didn't get the quote, but Tomoya says something about the, like, maybe she found her happiness, and then we go into that epilogue where she's in that kind of that situation.
That's what
I
thought was weird. Mm-hmm. I thought that was strange as well. I don't really know what happened. I couldn't say. I'm not sure if it was supposed to be super ambiguous, but looking at it, like, kind of basically, I'd say what CJ said is probably on the money. I feel like it was probably just, you know, happiness was achieved, everyone got what they needed, and she left her coma for some reason. it seems strange to me because it seemed that from Coco's perspective, like, that she was going, like, she'd stopped breathing. I guess she was on, like, a machine at that
point.
Yeah,
that did happen,
like,
didn't it?
It seemed like she was, like, gone. Like, it was very strange. So I couldn't necessarily tell you what might have actually happened. But looking at it from just kind of your typical happy ending perspective, I would assume that just kind of miracles came to be because maybe she was bound by that wish, and so that needed to be granted for her to be set free.
Yeah.
And now, maybe. Like, maybe the light itself, as I said, I kind of considered that manifestation to be like a light, or maybe that was what was powering her to still stay alive, but it could only kind of project her until she could complete that wish and then come back or something. I don't know.
In Messiah's route, when Shima actually achieved the wish, the light orb disappeared, so.
Yeah, fucking key magic, man. I don't know, man.
It's too hard. Like, I still think it's more hypothetical than anything, but hey.
I think it's definitely open to... Hey, man, we've been talking about perception. Is it a star? Is it a starfish? Is Fuko cute? Is she disgusting? I don't know. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
If we're talking about how, I guess, the light orb disappeared in Shima, or in Misai route,
yeah.
Like, notably, you don't get a light orb at the end of this route, so maybe it's...
No.
Like, she achieved her happiness, and that's how...
But in the end, a wish was granted.
Yes,
that's an important point. A wish still is to be granted here. And, like, so if Fuko exists as a light orb, doing whatever she was so motivated to do, like how Shima is so motivated to do this thing for their master, then maybe they're the manifestation of the light orb, and then they're able to grant Coco's wish, which is to give Fuko a normal, friendly school life, and so then she gets to come back from dying. Booyah!
Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom. There you go.
I figured it out. Somewhere, but I think that makes sense.
It does in a way make sense. Like, even though they never stated, I still
just figured that shit out right now. Could be completely wrong. I don't know. Just happened. I'm telling you right now, that's gonna be my headcanon though. That's what happened. Yeah. That's it. That's the true end right there.
Maybe Coco did get a light orb sometime in her life. I think Carafian did mention how she might have. Oh wait, he spoiler tagged it, so I'm not allowed to say.
Anyway. That's what I was just saying earlier, yeah. About how, like, there's so many, like, wishes in the route. Like, where is, like, there's like, it's hard to tell what is actually happening whenever I was talking about the light thing, but now that you brought that up, holy shit, I didn't think of that, and now, yeah, yep, that's what happened.
that's okay, alright.
Canon. Okay,
fair enough.
Cut it, ship it. It's good.
Alright. I guess that means we're done.
I just have one more thing that's kind of, like, off topic. It's, just, I found this quote that has to do with the themes of family and the town. It's just this quote by Tomia. He says, "This town is no good. The kind of town that doesn't care enough about its people to build a hospital where families can stay over." And then to which Coco replied with something having to do with... What was it?
She said... I think it's another stab at the idea of, like, the town in general and how things... change. She says, like, well, that may benefit her, it'd probably be kind of a problem to a lot of the people in the town.
Yep. I think Tomoya was just looking for an excuse to say, I hate this town again. Because I'm convinced that Tomoya doesn't actually hate this town. He just hates his experiences with his dad. So he was just looking for an excuse to hate this town again, even though he doesn't actually hate this town.
Apparently Arian concocted the same idea as me and needed to post it on the forum. So sorry, Arian, I stole it from you, but shout outs to hey, Arian, because apparently me and him are on the same wavelength.
Yeah, you didn't steal it for him. You just followed the same thing at the same time.
Shout outs to the audience.
Yeah, why don't we give them a shout out?
Kobu, Gagler, Enon Conan Doyle, VJ, and Arian. So hi, audience. thank you, Maida, for this route, or maybe otherwise, for people who didn't like it very much. I want to give a special thanks to Fuzzlekins, Zach M, Kyuketsuki Miyu. I'm going to say this right.
Kyuketsuki Miyu.
Kyuketsuki Miyu, thank you. Canon, Carafan, and Helios Alpha for your excellent contributions on the forum. Keep those posts going, guys. Love it. And, yeah, I guess that's about all. Don't have any fan art to shout out today.
No fan art again today.
Get some fan art out, guys.
We need to get on this.
I guess I need to make my own drawings. We need to not be stinkers. We need to do some ourselves. We can't.
Someone should have drawn the starfish.
Someone draw some starfish.
That's true. We should all draw starfish and make the starfish-a-thon.
Just make 700.
And then the starfish nation attacked. Alright, well that's a wrap. See you guys! We're gonna be here next week for the very teeny tiny
Komura
route. Which should be...
The Komura scene.
We need to reschedule to record it in the middle of the week. I don't know. Because it goes pretty quick. But, yeah, we'll have
lots to talk
about
that.
It's
pretty short, but I guess it'll give us a lot of time to catch up with a lot of reading we weren't able to do, maybe.
Yeah. I better see some damn Komura fan art.
Yeah.
Calling you out. Anyways, bye, everybody.
Bye.